From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. A ship carrying food, intended to feed 180,000 people for a month, finally arrived in Yemen in the port city of Aden. The World Food Program said it was the organization's first chartered ship to berth at the southern port since March, when Saudi Arabia began its air bombardment campaign against Yemen. Daniel Dickinson filed this report from the United Nations.
The MV Hanji, with 3,000 metric tons of food, docked at Aden's oil port of Al Buraika on Monday. Although the ship had arrived off the Yemeni coast on the 26th of June, it was forced to wait over 3 weeks for a safe window to berth. Reem Nada is based in Cairo, Egypt, for WFP.
This is a breakthrough in our operations in Yemen because it was vital for us to be able to reach the south directly via the port because it does speed up our operations. We can reach more people that way, in the south especially, that is really suffering and coming under the fighting that has been taking months so far.
A recent WFP assessment put the number of food insecure people in Yemen at close to 13 million. That includes more than 6 million people who cannot survive without external assistance. Daniel Dickinson, United Nations.
With a thaw in relations underway between the U.S. and Cuba that includes the opening of embassies, Havana is now looking for the lifting of the half-century-old regime of U.S.-led sanctions that it has labored under for the terms of the past 11 U.S. presidents. But not everyone in Washington wants the sanctions lifted. CCTV's Jessica Stone filed this report from Washington.
For Cuba's 11 million people, the average monthly wage is around $17 a month. Cubans believe the U.S. trade embargo is unfairly penalizing their people. Cuba's foreign minister says his first priority in the new relationship with Washington is to get the embargo lifted.
Solo la eliminación del bloqueo.
The historic events we are living today will only make sense with the removal of the economic, commercial, and financial blockade, which causes so much deprivation and damage to our people.
And this year, Congress should begin the work of ending the embargo.
U.S. President Barack Obama has called on Congress to lift the blockade. The U.S. spends millions on blocked television and radio signals to the island and has lost billions in trade with Cuba. The chief lobbyist for U.S. businesses visited the island last spring, calling for an end to the embargo.
The fact is, all the momentum is with people who want to change this policy. I think the people who are holding on to the past look more and more isolated.
But members of both parties in Congress say the trade embargo must stay in place until Cuba changes its human rights and property rights policies and becomes more democratic.
When it comes to Cuba, the administration keeps giving and giving and giving. But the Castro brothers are doing nothing.
Meantime, polls showing in the United States that something like 59% of Americans now support the lifting of that embargo. So getting the pressure on Congress might be as simple as many phone calls to congressmen and women. Jessica Stone, CCTV, Washington.
More developments in Greece. The country's banks reopened Monday after being closed for the past 21 days in what many say was retaliation for the Syriza government's July 5th referendum. On Tuesday, Olga Yerevasili, a Greek government spokesperson, said negotiations with creditors would restart after the Greek parliament votes on a second batch of reforms, which includes an EU directive that guarantees bank deposits up to 100,000 euros. She added that Athens expects the negotiations to take until August 20th. Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras submitted the reforms proposal to parliament Tuesday. The vote set for Wednesday was met by anti-austerity protests outside the parliament.
Сьогодні на з'їзді правого сектору були прийняті стратегічні рішення. Перше, правий сектор ініціює референдум, всеукраїнський референдум, на яке буде винесено декілька питань. Перше, недовіра влади.
That was Dmitry Yarish, the leader of Ukraine's neo-Nazi right sector movement, demanding a referendum to dissolve the current Kiev government, as he addressed a crowd of thousands of supporters gathered in central Kiev's Maidan Tuesday. Aside from the referendum, Yarosh said his group's demands include a cancellation of the Minsk agreements, a blockade of the eastern Donbas region, and the legalization of his armed volunteer battalions. We begin with this report from Press TV's Lana Savchek from Kiev.
Hundreds of Ukrainians flocked to the streets of the capital, Kyiv, for an anti-government rally organized by the radical right sector group. The leader of the group, Dmytro Yarosh, described his supporters a disciplined revolutionary force and pledged to dispose of old politicians without violence.
The right-wing sector is an alternative to the current regime, which is fully disappointed the people of Ukraine, and it has to be resigned immediately.
The Ukrainian far-right groups also called for a national referendum to impeach President Petro Poroshenko and his government.
The parliament does not have any support. 450 lawmakers and a bunch of cabinet ministers cannot increase their good fortune simply at the expense of ordinary Ukrainians.
Yet some people believe Ukrainians are repeating their past mistakes. The radical right sector group was the driving force of the Euromaidan protests that prompted former President Viktor Yanukovych to flee the country in February 2014 and brought the current pro-Western government to the power. Tuesday's rally comes in the wake of a deadly standoff between radical nationalists and police last week in westmost part of the country. The far-right activists claim they were trying to stop corruption, but Kyiv accuses them of using violence to reach their illicit goals. The nationalists see themselves as a counterbalance to the central authorities. This role is finding an increasing approval among Ukrainians who get disappointed with slow reforms and fast-growing misery in the country. Leon Savchuk, Press TV, Kyiv.
The crowd, estimated at nearly 6,000, which gathered at the Maidan Tuesday evening, consisted of supporters wearing camouflage clothes and waving the red and black flags of the neo-Nazi Ukrainian insurgent army. RT's Murad Gazdiev was there and filed this report.
Well, it's barely been a year since Ukraine's last revolution, and the people, it seems, are back on Maidan Square. And many familiar faces, many of the same people. You have right-sector ultra-nationalists waving their black and red banners. These are the people, by the way, that did the heavy lifting during the last revolution, much of the fighting. And they've continued fighting ever since in the civil war on the front lines. And in this time, in the past year, they've amassed an army, a private army that's armed to the teeth. And now it seems they've become an inconvenience for the new government, which, especially after the incident a few weeks back in Mukachevo, where a right sector fighters and a local politician, a member of parliament, apparently couldn't decide on how to split a cigarette smuggling route from Hungary. And a pitched battle erupted in the town with machine guns, rocket-propelled grenade launchers, things like that being used, things from the front lines on the other side of the country. Police got involved, 13 people killed or wounded. You had President Poroshenko sending National Guard and armed units to basically disarm right sector fighters, to arrest them. He called the incident a terrorist attack and called on the Interior Ministry to disarm right sector. But right sector really aren't the sort to just go down without a fight. They've promised to stand up to the president. We've even heard the leader of right sector threaten to use violence against their loot. To using violence against the government. But it isn't only right sector that's on Maidan today. There are also liberals, people who were promised the world, a new European future. And now they're watching reforms that they were promised stagnate, stall, or be mothballed altogether. So they're angry. And you have people, just average working folk, who during the past year under this new government have watched their living standards plummet under the last president, who the new authorities call a dictator. The economy was doing an order of magnitude better. The average salary in Ukraine in dollars was twice what it is today. So there's a lot of anger, many grievances, and it's come together on Maidan again. But the question really is, merely a year since their last revolution, whether the people have any appetite to topple yet another government.
For more on this, we spoke with Dmitry Babich, the popular Russian radio broadcaster, who hosts a show at Voice of Russia State Radio in English and is also editor at Russia's Sputnik News Service. We spoke with him via Skype from Moscow Wednesday. So, Yarosh yesterday on the Maidan, what a sight.
Well, actually, you know, the right sector is now a registered political party in Ukraine, although it would not be registered in any European country because it's an openly nationalist, extremist nationalist, I would even say Nazi-like group. They were useful in removing the former president Viktor Yanukovych from power. So they've got their share of power in the new Ukraine under the new regime. Independent of their results at the election, they were influential in the army and in the government. And now it looks like the authorities don't need them anymore. So there is a conflict between a regime, which Mr. Poroshenko and Mr. Yatsenyuk themselves let out of the bottle a year ago. And the rally yesterday was not very impressive. I mean, the right sector, which is Mr. Yarosha's party, they've got about from 3,000 to 5,000 people on the Maidan Square in central Kiev. But these people were not aggressive as usual, and they started to disperse as soon as Yarosh stopped speaking. I think they understand that, unlike last year, if they start taking administrative buildings right now, if they try to throw Molotov cocktails, they won't get any support from the West this time, and they will be cracked upon really badly. So these guys, who are actually cowards, they decided not to risk this time. So they put forward some very radical demands, like Mr. Poroshenko to leave power, to declare a war on Russia instead of the so-called anti-terrorist operation in the southeast of Ukraine. All of that is very belligerent rhetoric, but I don't think Mr. Yarosh himself believes it.
And they even had a shoot-em-out with some of the other folks over who's going to get to smuggle cigarettes from Hungary or something?
Well, you're exactly right. The problem is that the right sector is not strong as a legal political party. People in Ukraine, most of them are normal people, and they don't want to support the extremist nationalists. But the right sector people, there are some very dangerous criminals among them. The new prosecutor sent by Mr. Poroshenko to that western region where the shootout happened, this prosecutor actually said 80% of right sector's members had criminal cases opened against them in the past years. So these people are pretty dangerous, and they've got a lot of weapons, part of them from the Maidan days in 2014, when they seized the police precincts with open support from the Western governments, which said that this is people's revolution. Then they've got a lot of weapons in the east of Ukraine, where they were used by the authorities to crack down on the Russian speakers there. They committed a lot of crimes. That is acknowledged even by Mr. Poroshenko, that they committed crimes against civilians, the Russian-speaking civilians in that area. And now they are pretty desperate. And what happened in Mukachevo, and you mentioned that shootout, it happened right on the border with Hungary in a very special West Ukrainian region. It's called Zakarpattia, which is behind the Carpath Mountains. And the town is called Mukachevo. So what happened was that the right sector guys there were employed by one of the local oligarchs who smuggled cigarettes and who got into a brawl, got into a conflict with another oligarch. And the right sector people were used in that fight, but the attacked oligarch had police on his side. So there was an open, military action right in the middle of a huge city with buildings burning and at least 3 people killed. And the right sector people just fled to the woods. And now Mr. Yarosh says that they're all innocent, that they're all Ukrainian patriots, and he demands an amnesty for them from Mr. Poroshenko. But, all of that reminds me of, common criminals. Usually criminals, when they feel like the police is closing in on them, they get hysterical and they start yelling that this is all against my rights. This is, the revolution has been stolen from us. what have we been fighting for? On the Maidan, we were fighting against this thug Yanukovych, and now we have these new thugs cracking down on us. So this is all very, very familiar from criminal stories in the United States. You know, I lived in Boston, and I was startled several years ago when the local criminal gang, which in the 80s basically terrorized the whole neighborhood, none of them acknowledged that he was just a thug. They all said that they served their communities, you know, the Irish community, the Italian community, that they were all supporters of freedom, all that stuff. So you hear pretty much the same story from the right sector now.
Yeah, you know, it sounded more like Chicago and less like a new Cold War. And I'm wondering, coming out of all of the shooting and everything else, who's going to be the Al Capone that comes out of that? Is it going to be Poroshenko? Is it going to be Yarosh? Is there somebody else in the wings?
I'm afraid it's going to be just, I think it's going to be... the Mr. Devil, the old gentleman, as the British called it, because it is not for the good of Ukraine. Basically, Maidan, you know, this so-called revolution, openly supported by the United States and by the European Union, the country that it damaged most was Ukraine. Look at the figures, you know, in 2014, 1 year after the revolution, the Ukrainian GDP fell by 7%. This year it's going to fall by another 9%. You know, the exports to Europe, to the European Union, these same exports which the EU said it would encourage, you know, all of that association agreement was actually forced on Yanukovych in order to facilitate Ukrainian exports to Europe. So they fell by 36% under the new regime. So it is a scandal, and the problem is that the United States and the EU supported this revolution 100%. They support this new government 100%. So they share, at least they share the responsibility for the tragedy that we're witnessing in Ukraine. And the tragedy is this, first of all, it's the civil war, because Donetsk has been shelled every day. Mr. Poroshenko says that the rebels in Donetsk shell themselves, but I don't know who you have to be to believe that. Probably you need to be Victoria Nuland, or you need to be an Applebaum. They may believe it. But of course, you know, just to give you some figures, you know, the Ukrainian television usually prides itself on the fact that the rebels hold 3% of the Ukrainian territory. That's true, but 4 million people live there. So it's a very densely populated area. And what the rebels want is to push the Ukrainian artillery away from the so-called Donetsk agglomeration, from the city, a densely populated city, and the suburbs where millions of people live. They want to push the Ukrainian army away so that they can't shell these places. And the United States and the EU say no. That means that the rebel territory will expand. So you guys just stay there, don't do anything, and the Ukrainian government will organize elections for you. This same government, which is now bombarding you, but this is just a temporary nuisance. The situation is tragic, and I think that all of the people who are now ruling Ukraine, all of them will have to be held responsible for that. If not criminally, then politically. I don't think any one of them will be remembered as a successful politician.
A dashboard camera video taken by police and released Tuesday showed the traffic stop that led to the arrest of Sandra Bland by Texas State Trooper Brian Encinia 3 days before she was found hanging in her jail cell. Bland, who was 28 years old, reportedly came from the Chicago area to Texas to interview for a job at her alma mater, Prairie View A&M University. She was arrested after she was stopped July 10th for failure to signal a turn. According to Bland's recorded account, the incident began when Encinia, who was following Bland's car, began to speed up. Bland pulled over to allow him to pass, and he pulled her over for failing to signal.
Okay, man. You okay?
I'm waiting on you. This is your job. I'm waiting on you. What do you want me to do?
Oh, you seem very irritated.
I am. I really am. I feel like it's trapped with what I'm getting.
ticket for. I was getting out of your way. You were speeding up, tailing me. So I move over, and you stop me. So, yeah, I am a little irritated, but that doesn't stop you from giving me a ticket. So.
Thank you, sir.
That's your ticket.
Well,
are you done?
You asked me what was wrong, and I told you.
Okay.
So now I'm done, yeah.
Okay. You mind putting out your cigarette, please? Don't mind.
I'm in my car, but I have to put out my cigarette.
Well, you can step on out now.
I don't have to step out of my car.
Step out of the car.
In an interview Tuesday with RT, attorney Michael Hardy, general counsel to the National Action Network, said that Insignia had no right at this point to make her exit her vehicle.
It really says something very significant about this notion of contempt of cop, if you will. You know, the fact that she may or may not wanted to put out her cigarette was not any cause for that officer to engage her in the way that he did, which should not have led to an arrest at all. She should have never been in that jail cell.
Neither the threat of the stun gun nor the confrontation over the cigarette was mentioned in Insignia's incident report, which was also made public Tuesday. As Bland continued to question Insignia, his manner took on an increasingly angry tone, and the incident escalated dramatically.
Step out of the car.
No, you don't have the right.
Step out of the car.
You do not have the right to do that.
I do have the right. Now step out or I will remove you.
I refuse to talk to you other than to identify myself.
Step out or I will remove you.
I am getting removed for a failure.
Step out or I will remove you. I'm giving you a lawful order. Get out of the car now or I'm going to remove you.
And I'm calling my lawyer.
I'm going to yank you out of here.
Okay, you're going to yank me out of my car?
Get out.
Okay. All right.
25.
Let's do this.
Yeah, we're going to.
Yeah. Don't touch me.
Get out of the car.
Don't touch me. I'm not under arrest. You don't have the right to take me.
You are under arrest.
I'm under arrest for what?
25.
For what?
7 County FM 1098.
Just for what?
290. Send me another unit. Get out of the car. Get out of the car now.
Why am I being apprehended? You're trying to give me a ticket.
I said
for your
get
failure?
Out of the car.
Why am I being apprehended?
You I'm giving you a lawful order. I'm going to drag you out of here.
So you're threatening to drag me out of my own car?
Get out of the car.
And then you
I will light
me?
You up. Get out.
Wow.
Now.
Wow.
Get out of the car.
For a failure to signal. You're doing all of this for
get
a failure.
Over there.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, let's take this to court. Let's do
go ahead.
It for a failure to signal. Yep, for a failure to signal.
Get off the phone.
On my school.
Get off the phone.
I'm not on the phone. I have a right
put
to
your phone down.
My property.
Put
this
your phone
property.
Down.
Sir?
Put your phone down right now. Put your phone down.
Yeah, I did.
Come over here.
Y'all are interested.
Come over here now.
You feeling good about yourself?
Stand right here.
You feeling good about yourself?
Stand right there.
You feel your signal. You feel real good about yourself, don't you?
Turn around.
You feel good about yourself, don't you?
Turn around now.
What are you?
Put your hands behind your back and turn around. Turn around.
Why can't you tell me
I'm giving you a lawful order. I will tell you.
Why am I being arrested?
Turn around.
Why won't you tell me that part?
I'm giving you a lawful order. Turn around.
Why will you not tell me what's going on?
You are not complying.
I'm not complying because you just pulled me out of my car.
Turn around.
Are you kidding me? This is some bull.
Put your hands
you know
behind your back.
Because you know this is straight bull. You full of full of straight That's all y'all is. It's a scary cop. South Carolina got y'all scared. That's all it is. Scared of a female.
If you would have just listened.
I was trying to sign a ticket. Whatever.
Stop moving.
Are you serious?
Stop moving.
Oh, I can't wait till we go to court. Oh, I can't wait. I cannot wait till we go to court. I can't wait. Ooh, I can't wait. You want me to sit down now?
No.
Or you gonna throw me to the floor? That'll make you feel better about yourself?
Knock it off.
Nah, that'll make you feel better about yourself? That'll make you feel real good, won't it? For a failure to signal, you're doing all of this. A little ass Prairie View, Texas. My God, they must want
to. You were getting a warning. Until now, you're going to jail.
No, I'm getting it. For what?
You can come
for
read.
What?
Come read right.
I'm getting a warning for what?
Stay right here.
For what? Well, you
stay
just
right
pointed
here.
Me over there.
I said stay right
get
here.
Get your mind right. Let me. Oh, I swear on my life, y'all some a cop for a signal. You are taking me to jail.
She's in handcuffs.
What a what a 816. What? You about to break my wrist.
Stop moving.
I'm standing still. You
stay
keep
right
moving
here.
Me. God damn it.
Stay right there.
Don't touch me. For a traffic ticket.
Come right over here. This right here says a warning. You started creating the problem.
You asked me what was wrong.
Do you have
I'm
anything
trying to tell
on your
you,
person that's illegal?
Do I feel like I got anything on me? That's a
a maxi dress.
Remove your glasses.
This a maxi dress.
Come on over here.
Have on me. You're about to break my wrist. Can you stop? You are about to fucking break my wrist.
Stop moving. Stop now. Stop it.
Stop resisting, ma'am.
If you would stop, and I would tell you. Now stop.
You are yanking around.
When you pull away from me, you're resisting arrest.
This make you feel real good, don't it? A female for a traffic signal.
I got it.
I know that make you feel good, officer.
Go ahead, take care of yourself.
I know it make you feel real good. You're a real man now. You just slammed me, knocked my head in the ground. I got epilepsy, you mother.
Good.
I hope
good. You should have thought about that before you start resisting.
All right. Yeah, this is real good. Real good for a female. Yeah. Y'all strong. Boom. Y'all real strong.
I want you to wait right here.
I can't go nowhere with your knee on my back. God.
I'm going to open your door.
Okay. And Cinia's handcuffing and takedown of Bland mostly took place outside of the view of the police cruiser's dash cam. With Bland handcuffed and bleeding, later complaining of numbness and hearing problems, and Cinia turned his attention to the assembled eyewitnesses, at least one of whom was recording that part of the incident, which was outside of the view of the police dash cam.
You need to leave. For a warning, you're going to jail.
Whatever.
For resisting arrest. Stand up.
If I could, I can't.
Okay, roll over.
I can't even feel my arm.
Tuck your knee in.
Listen.
You're going to sit up on your butt.
You just slammed my head into the ground.
Sit up on your butt.
Listen to how he's telling you to get up. I can't even hear.
Yes, you can.
He slammed my head into the ground.
Sit up on your butt.
What the hell?
Stand up.
All of this for a traffic signal. I swear to God. All of this for a traffic signal. Thank you for recording. Thank you for a traffic signal. Slam me into the ground and everything.
Mom.
Everything. I hope y'all feel
this
good.
This officer saw everything.
I'm so glad to put that. You just got on the scene. So whatever.
I know you wasn't.
You were pulling up. No, you didn't.
No, ma'am.
You didn't see everything leading up to it.
I'm not talking to you.
You don't have to.
At the jail where Bland apparently died, some video outside of the hall from her cell was released. However, there's no video from inside the cell showing how she died. As of Wednesday, it was unknown whether there were any eyewitnesses to her death or what, if any, additional evidence exists. Whatever evidence does exist will likely end up in the hands of the local DA, which many say is a conflict of interest in police deaths, given the close working relationship between police and prosecutors. And if any other officers or other staff did witness police wrongdoing, they could face tremendous challenges should they decide to blow the whistle. For example, recent court cases in Florida have exposed harsh and often criminal treatment of inmates covered up by officers and officials throughout the state's correctional facilities. RT's Alexei Yaroshevsky reports on the case of John Pisciotta, a former officer who blew the whistle on a case of extreme abuse against an inmate, and faced years of harassment and retribution from his former co-workers.
According to the recollections of one of those guards, the guards walked inside, covered the man with a blanket and beat him up severely, at some point even ripping his eyeball out. Now, the guards who reported to their supervising officer said they had no idea why this happened to the man. This case would have probably had no ending if one guard, John Pisciotta, had not stepped up to whistleblow on the circumstances of the beating up. Now, as for John Pisciotta and his whistleblowing, he managed to get a $135,000 settlement from the state after losing his job, losing his house, and losing his pension.
I ended up getting fired, set up. My home got vandalized. My car got vandalized. We actually had to move out of the state.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.